It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And like we do each Monday, we slow down political news, take issues one at a time. Here's the quick order. We're starting with fresh news on the pardons, that situation. Then it's U.S. Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue's comments in Madison last week at the World Dairy Expo. After that, the special election in the 7th Congressional District. We're checking in there. We'll also look at the state Senate session that starts tomorrow. Some of the governor's cabinet, they haven't been up for a confirmation vote yet. Join in on any of this, starting with, are you a dairy farmer? What's your reaction to the U.S. Ag Secretary saying that creating bigger farms is the way to survive in the dairy industry? We're at 800-642-1234. J.R. Ross is editor of WisPolitics.com. J.R., welcome back to the Ideas Network.
How are you doing today?
Good. Well, starting with the pardon situation, Governor Evers is issuing the state's first pardons in 9 years. That's according to the Associated Press over the weekend. What can you tell us about the people being granted requests for clemency? What do we know?
One of them is a guy who was home recently from service overseas, a Marine. He was out drinking with some friends. Kind of a dispute arose, and he punched a guy in the nose, broke his nose, and because of that, it became felonious assault or battery, something like that. Basically, had no record before that, no record after. He's been seeking a pardon so he can go do things like be a police officer. He's getting one. There are a couple of drug cases, I believe, that are part of this. I went back and looked about a month ago at the people who have been applying for pardons from Evers, and the most likely crime that I found was a drug crime. Whether it's possession with intent to deliver, manufacturing with intent to deliver, a lot of drug offenses were along those being pardoned. And I'm getting the impression that, you know, Evers is sending a message with these first pardons of one, this guy who was a former Marine, one-time mistake, paid his debt to society, let him move on. These lower-level drug offenses that are two of the other cases, kind of the same thing of like getting at this, cleaning up something that was done, you know, one-time thing. They were young, let them move on and do something else with their lives. Now, what's going to be interesting to watch is this all comes in the context of Brendan Dassey, obviously, applying for either pardon or commutation of a sentence. You know, obviously, he's from the Making Murder Netflix series.
How to Make a Murder,
the death of Teresa Halbach. Under the criteria that Governor Evers set down, you are not eligible for a pardon unless you've completed your sentence and been off of supervision for 5 years. So what might Evers do in this regard? He said he would consider it, but by the criteria set down, it doesn't qualify for receiving a pardon.
Yeah, so how does Governor Evers' approach to pardons, how is that comparing to previous governors?
Well, with Governor Walker, there was no approach. I mean, he basically didn't consider him at all. Governor Walker's philosophy was, if you issue a pardon, it undercuts the judgment of judges and juries. He wanted no part of that. The subtext of that, though, is that governors know if you issue a pardon and that person reoffends, it can come back to bite you. Scott Walker obviously had national ambitions, ran for president. He knew that if he gave out a pardon and somebody went and did something bad, that would cause him political grief. So you just guard against that by not issuing him. I mean, again, he also philosophically said he didn't agree with doing it. But so for 8 years, we had none. Governor Doyle issued pardons. It's been a long-standing tradition. It's a power that only the governor has in Wisconsin. So basically, Evers is restarting a process that's been around for decades.
We're talking with J.R. Ross. He's editor of WisPolitics.com. He joins us on the State Capitol Report. You can join in. Do you live in the 7th Congressional District, perhaps? What's it like to go without a representative in the U.S. House? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. JR, let's look at the situation from the World Dairy Expo last week and the comment made by U.S. Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue. First of all, explain to us what Perdue said while he stopped in Madison.
Basically, he said there's not much of a future in small dairy farms. He said the future is in consolidation and getting bigger, that in America you get big or get out, essentially. This was kind of an interesting approach for the Ag Secretary, considering that we are right now in Wisconsin seeing a record number of dairy farms close every year. We are seeing a movement toward consolidation. And that, you know, I talked to people last week about this comment that he made, and the point I heard was, you know, he might have a point. I mean, maybe that is really the future of the dairy industry. But remember, Wisconsin has a tradition of small family farms. When you're in a situation where those small family farms are closing, it's quite tone deaf to go send a message of, yeah, you know, tough. In particular, don't forget that Secretary Perdue was in Minnesota, I think in August, was talking to farmers about the tariffs and the impact on the ag industry. And he said he heard a joke from a Pennsylvania farmer. I think it was something along the lines of, what do you call two farmers in a basement? The answer was a wine cellar. That comment did not go over well, obviously, with the ag industry. So to be so tone deaf and not have learned your lesson from August struck some people as odd that I talked to.
Representative Travis Tranel said the get big or get out model is the reason for low prices and for oversupply. And he sent this letter to the AIC secretary. What are our lawmakers saying here?
It was pretty much bipartisan condemnation of what he had to say. Glenn Grothman, Republican congressman, normally a pretty big backer of the Trump administration. He wasn't very happy with the comments either. And, you know, in talking to folks last week, one point that was made to me was Donald Trump won Wisconsin in 2016 by around 23,000 votes. He did well in rural areas that helped fuel his victory. This is like easy campaign fodder for Democrats to go out there and send out mailers, do radio TV ads aimed at farmers saying, look, this guy says you don't matter. Get bigger, go home. It's not particularly helpful in a state that's already going to be like the eye of the storm for the presidential election to have this kind of fodder out there to kind of strike at the president's base.
Let's bring in Kevin now, joining us from Platteville. Hi, Kevin.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Thank you. My comment is based on what the ag secretary said about going bigger or staying home. And it's absolutely true. If you stop to think about it, it works not only for the dairy industry, but it works for the beef industry. It works for the chicken industry. It works for the turkeys we eat, the pork we eat, the eggs that we consume. The problem with this situation of these huge conglomerate farms is when something goes bad, it goes real bad. And the concern that I understand it to be in this particular instance is the manure runoffs getting into the groundwater. So it's going to come. We all know it's going to come. We've all seen our local, our small town druggists close up and our small town grocers close up. The big box stores are always taking over. It's not something we can fight. Unfortunately, when something does go wrong, it's going to be a very big problem.
Scale is an issue here. Kevin, thanks so much. And Kevin has real concerns, JR, over scale and the impact of CAFOs, these large animal feeding operations.
Oh, that's a whole other can of worms. I mean, there are the siting issues that are going on, manure runoff, smell, as we've seen. More and more like housing loans pop up in rural areas. There's more conflict between homeowners and farmers. I mean, you know, it's just a different world. My grandfather was a dairy farmer in western Kenosha County. His father before him, and on down the line for generations, farmed in western Kenosha County. It's a different industry than it was when he was farming 50 years ago. It's just changed. The question is, how can you best, the Trump administration, how can you best address that change in a sensitive way? Senator Perdue's comments didn't really do that.
We're taking political developments one at a time with J.R. Ross as our guide. He's editor of WisPolitics.com. What kind of research do you think the state should be funding? Are you excited about the UW's Dairy Innovation Hub, or do you think other areas need more attention, more money? Join in at any point here, 800-642-1234. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. More State Cap to come in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're doing a roundup of the latest developments in politics. Later, we'll look at the Senate session that starts tomorrow. The calendar shows appointment confirmation votes for five of the governor's agency secretaries. So how do you think the legislature should handle Evers' cabinet secretary picks? Are they slow walking the process or taking the right amount of time to approve statewide department leaders? Your thoughts, 800-642-1234. J.R. Ross is our guide. He's editor of WisPolitics.com. J.R., let's take a look here at the special election for Wisconsin's 7th Congressional District, the seat being vacated by Sean Duffy, who resigned last month. It looks like now the special election may not happen for a while. How could a new date change the situation for candidates?
Well, it's interesting. First, we have to look at a new date because Governor Evers basically kind of goofed up on a conflict between state law and federal law. And what that is state law says if you have a special election, it has to be the primary has to be 28 days before the general. So he picked these dates in January and December, a rare if not unprecedented Monday election, to get that done before the spring election we have, which is February primary and April general. Well, federal law says you have to have 45 days between a primary and general election for a federal election to get ballots overseas to military and overseas voters.
Uh-huh.
So we have to look at a new date now. And right now, it's pushing off the window. So somebody like in the 7th, Republican Tom Tiffany, Republican Jason Church, they have more time to go out there and kind of raise money and woo voters. But they also don't know what the election is going to be yet. So it's kind of hard to figure out a definite plan of when to get things done. Meanwhile, Democrats don't have a candidate announced yet. It gives them more time to figure out who might be their best candidate or somebody else to get into the race in the weeks ahead.
Well, it's also interesting who, what other races may be on the ballot might influence the voter, the type of voters that turn out?
Yeah, well, I mean, Governor Evers, when he picked the December and January dates originally, his argument was he wanted to fill as quickly as possible because of things like impeachment, the trade wars, all the stuff raging in Washington, D.C. And that's why his push was. But when I talked to people, their thought was he was trying to avoid having the special election line up with the April ballot. Why that is key is that we have the presidential primaries on the April ballot. Yes, President Trump has got a couple Republicans running against him. We don't see that as being a very spirited race just yet. But the Democrats have a wide open campaign for the nomination. So assuming that we're still going to have a contested primary for Democrats come April, that's going to boost turnout significantly. If that happens, it then helps progressives significantly in the race against conservative Supreme Court Justice Daniel Kelly. Oh. The idea being that if you have maximum Democratic turnout in April, that makes his life more difficult. And don't forget, Republicans toyed with the idea last year of moving the presidential primary to an entirely different date to avoid having the ballot same day as Kelly's race. That's how important the seat is. So for Evers now, the choice is he's looking at doing an April 7th special election with a primary February 4th, looking at April and May as dates for this. The going bet is that he's going to try to avoid that April date because you might impact the Supreme Court race. Now, I don't know at all what turnout was going to be like in a special election for a congressional seat. We have not had a special election for a congressional seat since 1993. Mm. But the idea is it's a Republican seat, a strongly Republican seat. And if you have that the same day as April ballot, it might help drive Republican turnout and make that Supreme Court race more competitive.
All right. So we just put a pause on that as we see what is going to untangle there. Let's look at the cabinet picks for a moment. Preston Cole is Governor Evers' pick to head the state's DNR. Legislative mm-hmm. committee has recommended him for confirmation from the full Senate. So it looks like Preston Cole is on a path, but other secretaries don't seem to be getting that confirmation and that light of day. What's going on?
Well, first, I've covered the Capitol for almost 20 years. I have never seen it take this long to confirm not just all, but any of the governor's cabinet picks. And there's several layers of this onion. The first layer is that, remember the lame duck session back in December, Republicans passed a bunch of laws to kind of restrict the powers of incoming Governor Evers and incoming Attorney General Call. That set off a kind of a contentious relationship. And quite frankly, the relationship between Governor Evers' office and Republican leaders is almost non-existent. It's quite frankly broken. So there's that standoff there. Two, out of that lame duck session, remember the Dane County ruling overturned all the actions temporarily from that extraordinary session. Evers then rescinded a bunch of the confirmations that happened and then moved to push people like PSC Commissioner Ellen Novak out of her job. Now, she was eventually restored, got back pay, but that caused added tension, and Republicans in the Senate were not happy about that. So you add in those two factors, and then thirdly, the Senate hasn't met that much this year. It's just not been a very robust schedule so far for the state Senate. We are now in, get close to the middle of October without anybody confirmed. Now on Tuesday, we're going to take up five picks. Peter Barker at Revenue, Joel Brennan Administration, Kathy Blumenfeld at Financial Institutions, Kevin Carr at Corrections, and Mary Kolar at Veterans Affairs. I talked to Scott Fitzgerald, the Senate Majority Leader, on Friday. He said his caucus was still had some questions about a few others. They were going to work through that and maybe some more come up in November. The thing to watch, though, are people like Brad Pfaff at Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, Craig Thompson at Transportation, Andrea Palm at Health Services. Various Republicans have raised concerns about their nominations on various grounds, even though all of them got through committee except for Andrea Palm unanimously, and Palm had one no vote. What's happening, though, is right now it's a 19-14 Senate Republican majority in the Senate. Scott Fitzgerald basically has a benchmark of, for anything to move in that chamber, it must have 17 GOP votes, which means that anything passes just with support of his caucus. If you put Craig Thompson on the floor of the Senate right now, he would pass. Like, people I talk to are convinced about that. But he wouldn't get 17 GOP votes necessarily. And that's what's holding up some of these nominations.
Oh. Talking with J.R. Ross, our guide on the State Capitol Report Roundup. He's editor of WispPolitics.com. You can join in 800-642-1234. Some funding for the UW system is going to pay raises in efforts to help student success, like improving graduation rates. Do you think these are the most pressing issues right now? How else could you use the money? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. JR, before we get to the UW funding, let's look at the federal court that threw out a case over the lame duck laws limiting the powers of the governor and the attorney general. What did the federal judge in this case say?
He basically said that disputes over this law belong in state court, not federal court. Even if he were to take up the merits of the case, there would be some problems. Democrats sued in federal court raising First Amendment issues over the lame duck laws. It's things like retribution for their political views. And the judge basically said it's not a very strong case. What's worthy of note is we've had four lawsuits filed over the lame duck session. One was more of a continuation of an old fight because Republicans some years ago passed restrictions on early in-person absentee voting. They were tossed out. They tried to revamp those in the extraordinary session. Federal judge, the case went back and said, okay, this still violates my old order. So set that one aside. There have been three cases about the heart of the extraordinary session actions. One, state Supreme Court has already knocked out. That was basically about whether the legislature properly met in extraordinary session in December. Court said, we are not going to dictate the legislature when it can meet. The second one was this First Amendment case in the federal courts. The third is going to be for the Supreme Court again, October 21st, oral arguments. That's more of a separation of powers issue.
Mm-hmm.
But in talking to legal experts in the state, they are betting right now that the Supreme Court is going to uphold the law. We have a 5-2 conservative majority right now. The Republicans I talked to will tell you that the court is going to hold the law because it is sound law and the legislature acted properly. Democrats will complain to you that the Supreme Court's been bought and paid for by the very groups that want to see these laws upheld, so they don't have any faith in the court. Either way, I don't talk to many people who think it's a much of a shot of those laws being overturned by the current court majority.
And very quickly, the legislature's Joint Finance Committee has approved releasing nearly $54 million in funding for the UW. What do we know about this money, where it will go?
Basically, it's incentive-based funding. So they set this money aside in the budget. It was less than half of what Governor Evers wanted to do. But the Republicans' legislature said, okay, UW, you must come back to us with a plan of how you're going to spend this money before we'll release it. So last week, we had that hearing. The regents approved in August, I think it was, the plan of how to divide up the money. Joint Finance approved the release. Basically, it's going to end up about 40% of it will go to UW-Madison, the flagship campus. It's a series of benchmarks you have to hit that Republicans are happy with about how this money would be used and how to divvy it up, and that's where it's going to go.
Well, JR, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Anytime. Have a great day.
J.R. Ross is editor of WISPolitics.com. Coming up, the State Capitol Report continues as we talk with our state veterinarian. You have a line to Dr. Darlene Conkle as we talk about preventing diseases in pets and livestock, wildlife. Join in at 800-642-1234. What are your concerns that you want to address with the state veterinarian? It's a conversation with our state's chief animal health officer. It's coming up right after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.